is what does it mean to think about heroes that are working for and fighting for working class conditions? And this became more prominent. So the thinking about neoliberalism as this sort of era that began in the era of Reagan and the privatization of everything and the gutting of the public sphere and the gutting of the New Deal. What does it mean to be a hero that's fighting for working class issues at a time that it seems like the working class is losing its power and its agency?
Thanks for tuning in to New Ideas, a Ronald Williams Library podcast about faculty research at Northeastern Illinois University. This is Ed Remus, the social sciences librarian.
And I'm Alyssa Vincent, the digital scholarship librarian. Today's episode has Jonathan Gronley, our library specialist for access services, talking with Ryan Pohl, assistant professor of English.
So I want our listeners to know that this episode is pretty unique in three ways. One is that as interviewer, we have the brainchild behind the podcast itself. Jonathan normally serves as our producer, but it was his idea for us to get this podcast started, and we're very glad to have him in this role now as interviewer as well as producer. Also, there's a teacher-student dialogue that you're about to hear. Jonathan studied English here at NEIU. He earned a master's degree here, and many of the classes that he took here were taught by Ryan. And so you'll hear that they really know each other's thinking very well, and it's great to capture that in the interview. Also, Jonathan decided to ask Ryan about the full range of his scholarly work. So many of our previous interviews focus on just one research project or maybe two closely related projects. But here, you're going to hear about Jordan Peele's work, about Star Wars, about the working class hero and neoliberalism, about Ryan's writing for the publication Pop Matters, and also about Ryan's work to develop a popular culture studies program here at NEIU. So a really great range of work.
I'm so excited to hear this conversation. I know that both Jonathan and Ryan have been supportive of the podcast and that they've been wanting to put this out for a while and be able to have this conversation. So I'm really excited to hear what they have to say.
Yeah, let's get to it.
Great to have you in here.
Thank you, Jonathan.
To narrow things down, since I know that you do a lot of different work, let's focus on your work that deals with Star Wars, your upcoming book on the working class hero and neoliberalism, and Jordan Peele's work. Can you quickly introduce our listeners to what you've been working on?
Yeah, so that's a lot to cover. Those are three different, or they're actually all intertwined. So basically, this trajectory of thinking deeply about and writing about popular culture, it really was galvanized by two things. I've always had an interest, but unfortunately, I've sort of internalized this sort of like the shame that sometimes goes in academia. When I was going through graduate school, right, that the students that were the work that was celebrated the most, they were working in more with canonical texts, right? With like poetry and, you know, canonical fiction. And I still love that material and I always loved popular culture, but it was something that I felt I had to hide and like I couldn't sort of like come out into the open. But it was really, so I've always wanted to work on it. And I did work on it in my dissertation and my first book, Main Street and Empire, dealt with popular culture. But just how this comes together, it was really having children and like, how much my kids were thinking about the world through popular culture, through Star Wars and through heroes and the way like they were thinking about values. And I'll get into each of these projects, but of Star Wars, thinking about heroes, what does it mean to stand up to evil, right? What are the best attitudes and affects? And I was just really, you know, it brought back that love and it became a sort of shared grammar, which to talk to people and also sort of friends and family that are not in academia. You know, when I talk about other projects I do, you know, I'm talking to my academic friends and then I talk about this work I'm doing for Star Wars and creating a course on Star Wars. you know, we have a whole 2-hour conversation. Like, can I come to my class? Can I join up? So the basic book is that I'm working on now, and there's actually two books that are part of the same series, is this idea of not to thinking about heroes as an ideological category, and how does the right and the left imagine heroes and how that plays out in popular culture. So really quickly on Star Wars, George Lucas was... he was a liberal. He was a progressive, right? And he created Star Wars, like, from his notes and from his diaries as an allegory to think about the U.S. and the Vietnam War, right? And to think about how do people on the left and the right use popular cultural forms and genres to think about their own ideas. And so the project is framed just very quickly and rooted in John Lennon's song, A Working Class Hero. And he said in interviews, this is a revolutionary concept, and I want people to think about that. So I thought about working class heroes. What would it mean to think about heroes, not just like as, you know, a discussion about heroes, but how heroes are related to class? And I guess what I was thinking about, and I wrote about John Lennon's song, is what does it mean to think about heroes that are working for and fighting for working class conditions? And this became more prominent. So the thinking about neoliberalism as the sort of era that began the era of Reagan and the privatization of everything and the gutting of the public sphere and the gutting of the New Deal, what does it mean to be a hero that's fighting for working class issues at a time that it seems like the working class is losing its power and its agency? So I'm thinking more about popular culture that recognizes working class heroes as allegories for working class agencies. So the book project moves between chapters that are looks at popular culture like Star Wars that's thinking about working class heroes. And I think about, right, they're all the characters that come together. They're working class, they're working class people, right? They're working on ships. They have used ships. It's a used universe, right? They're farmers.
Yeah, it's
they're
very lived in.
It's very lived in, right? So, like, to think of them as sort of these working class and how diverse the working class is, right? One of the things I loved about Star Wars is that even think about droids, right? They're such a clear allegory that, like, the Empire, droids are, like, they're disposable, right? And other species, the Empire is only constituted by humans and mostly white humans. Where the rebellion is, it's all species... droids, right? So you're thinking about building a working class coalition that's founded in diversity and intersectionality. So I'm interested in projects like that.
That's absolutely fascinating. And what about Jordan Peele's work, especially in terms of a movie like Us?
Yeah, so we'll probably get to it later, but I have an article on Jordan Peele's Us and on Get Out. So actually, so that my work on Jordan Peele, that's part of the book. And I guess I said... And I'm thinking more about Jordan Peele. So I'm organizing the book is one chapter focuses on working class hero and the other chapter focuses on what are the neoliberal conditions that give rise to these heroes. And I think Jordan Peele is so interesting to look at because he's showing sort of the horrors of our neoliberal economy from the perspective of African Americans specifically,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, especially due to issues where we're not really consistently observing racism as it pops up, even in a during and post Obama USA.
Absolutely. So my essay on Get Out, which came out last year, but it's gonna be part of this book. The very idea is, I think the movie is so brilliant. This idea, even Get Out, it comes from right an Eddie Murphy joke that he suggests in the joke that the horror genre is a white genre because if an African-American family or individual walked into a house that was haunted, they would get out right away, right? And I thought the joke is so brilliant because it suggests what does allow like horror in its dominant form? It exists because of white ignorance because they don't think horror is part of their everyday world, right? And I think Jordan Peele, at least I argue, and I think Jordan Peele is recognizing this, to be African-American is to have your life saturated by horror. You're living in a horror movie. To be African-American and walk on the streets, your body is killable, right? And it's not mournable, right? In the dominant culture, the dominant racist culture. And to sort of think about that, like how, and there's this, I link that to the, like this philosophy of Afro-pessimism. The world is a space of horror. We don't need a special genre from that. But even again, thinking about heroes then, is heroes then even a belief of working class heroes, is that a form of, is that a type of like white privilege to believe there could be a type of heroes that can change our historical material conditions? Or are we such a racist nation that heroes become a way to evade thinking about how deeply saturated we are in racism.
That sounds absolutely fascinating. So you did touch on this quite a bit, and part of it goes back to your kids, but what was it that got you interested in studying these specific areas and the idea of the hero?
Yeah, I'm always looking for ways. So just to be clear, I think it's, you know, I love studying literature, but it's a both and, right? It's studying canonical text. And like, I still, like when I was getting my PhD, I thought I was going to write a PhD on poetry. I love poetry. I love teaching and studying literature. But as I've gotten older, not necessarily wiser, but as my mind has expanded, like sometimes we overprivilege certain media and genre for like thinking about narratives and ideas and values, right? And you're thinking more and more, why have we organized, even calling it English, why are we organizing a department that only look at three media of like literature, poetry, and drama, where some of the most interesting thinking and popular thinking, I'm always interested in courses and ideas that you expand the conversation to make it democratic. And that's what popular culture is, right? So how do you work more in that field and to bring more students into that conversation, to bring the wider community into that conversation? And again, I think it's a both and. It's studying literature and popular culture.
That makes perfect sense to me. And you kind of touched on this a bit when you brought up John Lennon's song about the working class hero. But when I heard you speak at MMLA this last November, you brought up some interesting racialized and gendered aspects to the working class hero. Can you go into a little more detail on what the working class hero is and how you fell across the concept?
Yeah, so I was really galvanized by John Lennon because of the complexities and the contradictions, even in his articulation. So John Lennon's song, A Working Class Hero, which came out in the 1970s, as I said previously, he said in an interview right after the song came out, I wanted to create an uplifting revolutionary song, and I want to think about the working class hero as a revolutionary concept that could galvanize people. But in that same interview, he said, I didn't want to have a song that was for the F word, a disparaging word for the LGBTQ community. And I was thinking about the ideological complexities of hero or a working class hero in projects that, right, so there's like on the right, you have, I mean, the hero can be this form or this genre that perpetuates the worst type of hierarchical thinking, right? It's like it could promote and celebrate aggressive forms of individualism, hypermasculinity, whiteness. And we could think of so many examples like of this, right? Especially with the rise of Reagan, we could think of like Rambo, right? The one white man that's going to win the Vietnam War for us, the second Rambo in particular, yeah, right?
And actually, it gets even more interesting when you get into the parodies of that kind of trope, especially with things like John Carpenter's They Live, where the two heroes, black guy, white guy, but the white guy has to beat the black guy into believing that he knows something.
Yeah, that's such a great example. And it's precisely examples like They Live that I'm interested, right? Like how do we, what are the popular culture texts that are expanding our conception of heroism that's not linked to a white male individual, but thinks about hero as a collective category, as a category rooted in diversity and intersectionality. And again, like, this is my friends. This is my kids and having friends. And you think about just different kids. Like, people talk about heroes all the time. Who do you look up to? What values do they represent? And to think about that as a political category, and to sort of, again, look at both sides, but I'm really interested in the left, the progressive side of this issue, but to look at you know, comic books that feature African-American heroes and Latinx heroes and movies that are doing this. And Star Wars, to me, still going back to Star Wars, became so interesting because all of a sudden you had Rey, right? She's like, with like Luke is like the typical white male hero. That movie shifts, especially, I love The Last Jedi with Rian Johnson.
Yeah.
You had Kelly Marie Tran, right? You had, you have so much representational, so much diversity. To me, the series was moving. I hated the last one, which I'm not going to talk about the last one. But under Rian Johnson, expanding that conception that a hero is a democratic category, it's a collective category, and to recognize all types of peoples that are participating in this culture, because it's about creating a new world that's socially just and equal for all of us.
Yeah, that's a very noble idea to try to lay that out. And it's something that ties into all of the work that you cover, but also all of your work that you've done to a certain extent, at least since I've known you. Now, since it pops up in everything, what's your process in researching issues like class and class in pop culture or heroes, in popular culture? And what difficulty did you have in finding ways to narrow it down to specific examples?
Right. So I'm really bad at narrowing down, but I'll get to that. But to the first point, sort of what sort of theories am I using? This took me a while in my academic career to recognize, but when I went to graduate school, we had a sort of model where we like had a theory course and you're studying theory and like how do you apply theory to literary texts. But to really think about reversing the process, that literature itself is engaged in the work of theory, that to think about the theoretical ideas that a text is wrestling with and to learn to think about that text doing the theoretical work, and then sort of to think about, okay, this like Get Out is wrestling with the ideas of what does it mean to be African-American in our contemporary society. And because I'm always reading theory, I introduce theoretical concepts like in every class I have. What theories does that seem to be in dialogue with, right? So by closely reading and analyzing Get Out, I put it in conversation with the African-American philosophies, Afro-pessimism, and post-blackness. But I didn't study those beforehand. The movies, I thought, were engaging in those issues. So both is to, I think, so to answer your question, is one is to think about literature and cultures doing the work of theory. They are theoretical texts. And secondly, to keep on reading theory, but in the most diverse and wide sense. Like, I try to do this in every class I have, literally every meeting. I try to introduce students to, like, a theoretical concept that they can develop in their own papers, right? So in my ecology course, like, and students brought this up, like concepts like ecological grief or what does the blue humanities mean? But like always reading theories because you never know when they're going to be useful at some time. But we should never think of like we study theory to apply to literature. So to answer your final question, like really quickly, how do you narrow it down? I think it's really important, anyone that's engaging in the project, to continually engage in the project of outlining, right? Outlining your project, whether you're thinking about a thesis or a paper. Because again, you can get lost. There's so much material. So if you're doing a project on, which John, I know this is your research, on like horror films and how horror films, let's say in the late 20th and early 21st century, how horror movies are thinking about the complexities and contradictions of US history. If you think of an outline, like this book is gonna have 4 chapters, and just sort of always working on that outline, which primary text is going to be the most, have the most depth and complexities that I could think about these issues of history, right? But you save so much time by outlining of like which movies I want to work on. And then once you settle that, like that's it. I'm only going to look at these 4 movies. Because if you allow yourself to keep on writing, it's like, oh, I almost swore, which I didn't. Holy S word. You know, I have like, I can write about 90 movies, right? But if you outline it saying like, this is a 4-chapter book, I'm looking at each chapter's organized around one movie. I could talk about other movies in that chapter, but you save yourself the time because you got to put borders around your own projects.
That makes a lot of sense. To further narrow this down, since it also ties into the previous question and it probably carries over, were there any specific theorists or writers that you tended to turn towards more for these projects?
So I'm always interested in theories of the working class, but I want to talk about a class that was just so fundamental to my own conceptual development. And I've been thinking about it a while. Like once I'd love to teach it here too, but it was a course on dialectical thinking. And just to break that down really quickly, something that started with like Hegel and Marx and practiced by Frederick Jameson and other theorists. But the basic idea of this practice is you take an idea or a discourse and think of its opposite and sort of bring them together to create something new, right? You have a thesis. And like the way we usually organize knowledge or disciplines, right? You have a thesis, you have to prove that thesis. But what I guess dialectical thinking is you take a thesis and you think about what's its opposite, what is its antithesis? And rather than thinking about, I can't look at its opposite because I got to prove my thesis, you bring the thesis and antithesis together and see what new knowledge is produced. So this very idea of like, so for example, like take pop culture, but put in conversation with politics and philosophy, right? And like rub those two discourses together and see what new is created. But to me, the most exciting projects is you're learning to be thinking in renegade and innovative ways. So, like, and this is sort of like a practice of writing that Hegel started, but I don't read Hegel that much anymore. But taking this course and studying writers and theorists that write dialectically, you know, again, it's sort of taking discourses that seem opposed and bringing them together and think them together to come with new knowledge, right? Bring together economics and popular culture, bring together Aquaman and the blue humanities, bring together Star Wars and post-colonial criticism, and that excitement of bringing different things that seem like opposite together.
Yeah, that is a great look at the process.
How many people just tuned out because I said Hegel three times? I'm just teasing.
So just to further build off on the process, how exactly did you choose these specific examples? For example, for the Working Class Awakens, The Last Jedi, or your work on postmodernism and free-floating racism in Jordan Peele's Us? Was it just more of this really fascinates me, or was there something else behind it?
Yeah, so for, I like to think, I mean, they're all interrelated, but I have larger academic projects and projects that, for lack of a better phrase, let's call them the public humanities, which are shorter articles, which I know we're going to get to, but I'm a staff writer for Pop Matters. But they become shorter, like 3,000-word essays to think about popular culture. And I love this sort of avenue that I just had an essay published today in Pop Matters. And I saw this movie 2 weeks ago on Gloria Bell by this amazing Chilean writer and director starring Julianne Moore. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. But to write an essay, you know, in 2 weeks, and it still takes a lot of time, but it's different than writing an essay that could take 6 months, and it's a slow process for academia. So I always like to be involved as much as I can. I have so many different like responsibilities in terms of teaching and service and whatever 10,000 things I have to do, be a dad and everything. But to engage in these smaller projects, because to me it's just so important to be, to me, writing is thinking, right? And I want to think about different things. So I get excited about writing because, you know, you see a movie or read a book and being like, I want to think more about this. So I have these shorter projects and the sort of larger projects. How do we pick them? And I think this is the most important thing for me. And one thing I try to have my students think about, that every time we write a paper, there should be something at stake. It should be important. It shouldn't just be you feel like you're doing banal work, but you're doing important work, thinking about social issues and social relations. And if you can articulate why it's important, it's going to be important to other people. And when we think our work is of social value, it gets me up in the morning. It gets me excited. It's why I'll stay up till 3 a.m. writing, because I think it's important. And to see those communities that are built of people saying, like, I read your essay and you made me think about this and that, right? So, again, it's sort of having work that matters and that there's something at stake.
That's great. Since you have done work on Jordan Peele with race and class, the Candyman series is getting a new installment that's being directed by him. And one of the things that it's covering, which will tie both in together pretty nicely, is the issue of gentrification.
Yeah.
Are you thinking of covering the movie for Pop Matters or any other projects, especially since part of it was filmed just a couple blocks, just across the street from the PE building of the main Northeastern campus?
Yeah, no, that's so exciting. I mean, Candyman is such a terrific movie, the original in so many ways, right? And I love that Jordan Peele is... actually, I don't know how invested. Is he just producing it, or is he writing and directing it as well?
He's directing it.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. So, I mean, I have two essays already on Jordan Peele. I'll follow him wherever he goes. Like, I love him so much. And I just think he's such a brilliant social thinker. And this is what I love about popular culture. He's a social thinker and a social theorist that uses the genre of popular culture to think about these issues, right? So, in the guise of a horror movie, what seems just like, you know, a safe or another entry into the genre of horror, right? Strategically using genres to do social thinking in the way he occupies, strategically occupies, yet respects these genres is terrific. But I love the social thinking through genres that Jordan Peele's doing and his deep recognition that the horror genre is such a theoretically rich and robust genre in which to think about the social issues that define this nation state, such as race, class, gender, sexuality. I mean, as you know, as your project on horror illustrates.
Yes, very much so. Now, since we have talked about Pop Matters, and as you've noted, we will be circling back around to it, how exactly did you get involved with them?
It was sort of an accident in part, but I started, reading stuff online. I've always loved to read popular culture, right? It's sort of like if I'm having lunch, I'll read essays about popular culture, and I stumbled upon the site, and there were a lot of academics writing for it, and I thought, like, oh, this is just, like, and I was young in my career, and I was, like it was, I was sort of insecure in so many ways. Is this an avenue I can write about? So I was like, I literally fantasized it would be so cool to write for them. And then, I wrote in an article for one day and it was accepted. I learned more about, Pop Matters and like how popular they are. I mean, they have a million readers, but even more so, it's owned by women and one of them's in Chicago. And they're both unbelievable. And it's such a male dominated field, like, popular culture sites. But the fact that this is run by two incredible, Sarah and Karen, are just absolutely amazing. I'm so committed to them and what they're doing every day to archive and collect really smart criticism on popular culture and inviting academics into that conversation and to recognize that the wider public wants to read intelligent criticism on popular culture and that popular culture is doing important theoretical work. So I love the fact that, I wrote one article, I became close with Karen, and she's been like, that avenue's been so salient to my own development as, just as a thinker and writer. But even in the classroom this past year, I created a course on, I've been teaching, well, this is the first time I did it, but I teach a course on cultural studies and cultural studies theory. But I talked to Karen, one of the people who owns and runs Pop Matters, and said, I'd love their final project to be an essay that's submitted to Pop Matters, and I want the editors to assess it. Right? What does it mean to write for a wider public? And I had all my students and I worked with them to develop their essays and like seven of them got published, right? So it's also so it's an avenue I could work with graduate students and even undergraduates to get their own work published, right? To think about all of us to be public, that we're writing for different publics and we should think about ourselves as public scholars and public intellects. So it's something I could share with the wider community also, which I love.
Yeah, that's very admirable, and ties into the next question really well. For the listeners who are interested in contributing or becoming a regular staff writer for Pop Matters, what kind of advice would you give them?
Well, I think like anyone that wants to write, it's so important to study the media or genre. So if you wanted to write for Pop Matters, look at the articles that are being published, identify who do you think are four or five of the strongest writers, look at their work and really study it at a form, right? What does it mean to write an essay between 1,000 and 3,000 words, right? How do you even form the paragraphs? What type of language do you use, right? Because I think sometimes, and I was just as guilty as this when I was younger, we just write and don't think about the platform in which we want to publish, right? But to write something and submit it to the New Yorker is different than writing and submitting something to Pop Matters or writing and submitting something to, the New York Times, right? Or whatever venue, right? But what's their style? What is their, how do they organize their essays? What type of theories are they using? So I think studying it and, and I could always be a resource. I probably shouldn't say this so publicly, but I'd be happy to, right? I think working with students and helping them take that next step is great. We have, again, I've just in class, right? I said, I've in our class, seven of our students were published. Another terrific student here, Hans Kim, who's in the English education program, who's a staff writer for Pop Matters now. So it's, to me, it's such a wonderful medium because, there's platforms that want to support young scholars, right? So both to have the confidence I could do it, but also to study the genre to make sure that you're crafting an article that fits within their pre-existing platform.
That's wonderful. And I know you wanted to talk about this. In conversations that we've had outside of this podcast, you've brought up the interest in bringing a pop culture studies program to NEIU. What type of program are you thinking of setting up for that? A BA, MA, minor?
Yeah, so it's something I've wanted to do for, you know, and I've been in conversation with several really interesting faculty, and again, we're just in preliminary stages, but I really want to devote my time and energy and hopefully get support from the university to make this come to fruition, right? But we already have courses on the book on popular culture. Like I have a course I teach on Star Wars, which is about, you know, the not just about the franchise, but how do they create a franchise? So it's partially a cultural studies course, partially a business course. We look at critical race theory, but like the communication and media theater has already great courses on the book. Dr. Pepper has a course on HBO, right? Sarah West. I mean, we have so many faculty, right? That have these amazing, Sarah West has this great course on social media and how social media is used. There's so many different faculty and so many different departments and programs. I've always had this idea, like, right, they exist in different departments, but what would it mean that to think about those courses as within an umbrella of popular culture, right? And to really build that program. And I had the privilege and opportunity to go to Bowling Green State University. I got some funding, and they have this program where they invite scholars to spend time there. And Bowling Green State University was the first in the United States to have a popular culture program. And the community they created there is so terrific. And people go there to get to major in popular culture studies. They built their own library on popular culture, and the type of theses that are being done there and how dynamic their courses are. I think we have the courses and the faculty to already do it here, but to even build it even more. So I'd love, like, I think, you know, we're actually meeting tomorrow, very select people. I mean, we're still preliminary. And like part of it is, how do we get more faculty involved? And I'm going to, you know, once we clarify how do we do this, to send an email to any faculty that's interested, like, what courses are you teaching or do you think you could develop that could become part of this umbrella? But one of my many goals, and this is one of becoming one of the top of the priority, because I think there's going to be support, is how do we make this a reality, to make this into a program and build it? Because I think it's going to attract new students here. You know, think of the conference opportunities to have every year, have a conference around a different organizing theme of popular culture, right? If we did a conference in 2020.
Kind of like how I think DePaul has
DePaul
that.
Does it, right? But, and like, I you know, and again, like, the more the merrier. And I think we might be able to do things that surrounding institutions don't, right? The way, how does popular culture function in a global context, right? Or what are the politics of popular culture? But to think about even like 2020, 2021, if we had a conference organized around Jordan Peele, around, you know, thinking about race, class, gender, and the city, right? Like, what a cool conference, and to invite graduate
students,
that would
be fascinating.
The community, and think about courses that could like be developed that could complement that conference, and every year change it. But I think it's just an avenue of growth. It would be a win for the university just to, you know, show what an amazing university we already have. And again, I think so many of the faculty that we have already doing this work, it's just not organized under a rubric of popular culture.
And part of your answer there did actually tie into my next question, which is, starting a new program has to be difficult in at least a basic way. How does a school work on creating new programs, and what difficulties do you foresee needing to overcome in trying to create a pop culture program?
Yeah, it's really difficult to start a new program, but I mean, part of it, I'll say the burden is, at least initially, is on the faculty to put together a really good proposal of why it's a viable program, that we have faculty and courses already in place. But I think once we make that case, and literally, we're in preliminary conversations, and anyone that's listening, if you're a faculty member, please reach out to me. You know, I'm going to send an email to everyone, but I just want to, I have to, like, I'm still working through some ideas, but it also becomes about institutional support, right? The deans, I mean, even moving up, the provost, the president, that there's support and maybe even a willingness to invest. Like, let's make this happen. Maybe here's some seed money or even some time. I think one of the most difficult things working at a university is, you know, I spend most of my time teaching and advising and writing these books. Like, sometimes just even the gift of time, this just sounds like I'm pleading to someone, but even having like a course release or two course releases, like I really believe if I had a course release or even a dream would be even more in the fall, I could make this happen. I could get whatever it is through governance. I would make this like my full-time job and sort of make it happen, do everything in my power to see it come to fruition. So any type of institutional support, and I think it could become a reality, but I think we have everything we need to make it happen, and we're already doing it. It's just, again, to formalize the process.
That's definitely good to hear that there's at least people who are already interested in helping you out with that, as well as having at least something to start and build from.
Yeah.
And that actually is a pretty decent segue into the final question that I have, which is, with everything that you do, if someone takes a class with you, reads one of your works, whether it's one of your books or your articles, what do you, or people listening to this podcast, what do you hope that people take away from what you're doing when they come across it?
I hope that all the works I create, you know, in the past, but more into the future, it just inspires other people to think, or galvanizes them to, like, if they're teachers, like, how can I maybe introduce more popular culture to my class to do social and political work? That I hope my work, whether that's articles or books, it's not about, wow, that's a great argument, or you're right, but it's more, you help me think about these things and you've given me openings to help or inspire me to think more or write about these really important issues in the way that we can use popular culture to have some really important critical conversations. And at least now, and at least with these books, and there's one other book I'm writing, which was, I thought was going to be a chapter of the working class book, but it's becoming its own book now. And I'm really excited about this, which we're not going to talk about because it's the last question, but about Aquaman and environmentalism, that you can use a comic book like Aquaman to teach ecological issues in the classroom, right? So it's like, how do you strategically use popular culture, both because you love it, but it's an avenue to think about gender and race and class and ecology and disability studies, and then finally that there's so much important work to be done, and that's really exciting also.
That's great. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you so much for taking the time, John.
You've been listening to Jonathan Gronley interview Ryan Pohl, Assistant Professor of English at Northeastern Illinois University.
If you enjoyed their conversation, please consider tuning into our other podcast episodes available to stream at NEIU Digital Commons.
This episode featured a sample of the song Tundra by Scanglobe. Thanks to Jonathan Gronley for not only acting as the interviewer, but for editing and producing this episode as well.